when someone's a victim of crime, one of the first questions they ask is why? So if you could stand in front of the person who broke into your home or stole your car and ask why, would you do that? This is an increasingly common scenario in many states and territories that run a program called Restorative Justice. This program is showing promising signs for reducing reoffending rates. Amber Williams is the CEO of Resolution Institute, and she joins us now. Good morning, Amber.
Hi, how are you going?
Great, thank you very much. Firstly, can you explain what restorative justice is?
Yeah, no problem. It is a process that looks to take, I guess, the justice issue away from being about punishment to being more around reparation or restoring, both the victim and offender's well-being and the situation, to look at how you can overcome the situation outside of, say, punishment or prison, etc., and those more serious outcomes. So taking the issue at the heart of it and looking at, well, how do we overcome that? How do we reduce that in the future? And how do we get everyone involved in determining the best outcome for that particular offender?
And why do you think putting the victim and offender face to face can help reduce crime and reoffending?
Well, a couple of different ways. Firstly, I guess it's important to state that it has to be voluntary. So everyone has to participate based on, I guess, volunteering to do that. So you can't mandate a victim to turn up to a restorative justice conference. But really, it's about giving, I guess, firstly, from a victim's perspective, giving them the opportunity to hear from the offender, hear their story, to understand that maybe it wasn't something that was personally about them, and getting the context around that crime and the situation, and being able to restore their, I guess, their faith in community or take away fear, whatever it may be. And for the offender to understand the impact of their crime on others, whether it's an individual, a community, an organisation, and to help them figure out, well, how do I take accountability for my actions, and how do I then put in place things that will repair that relationship if it's with another person, and or get treatment, therapy, education to help them overcome the challenges that they are experiencing in their life that led to that crime.
Amber, I have to ask, is there a possibility that the process could end up causing more harm and distress to victims that are, you know, already feeling quite vulnerable after an incident?
I think, look, that is a situation that happens very rarely. The reason being, it is used for situations that are not most serious crimes. So you would find it very unusual in Australia anyway to use it for those kind of really high risk offenders and repeat offenders over and over and over again with very, I guess, limited chances of rehabilitation. In New Zealand, they do use it for more serious crimes, but it needs to be done in a really measured and managed situation where we have a really strong and experienced convener who manages that situation, manages the parties involved to protect the well-being of everyone. But that risk is very minimal. We see more benefits out of the process than harm coming out of it, which is one of the reasons why it's been so successful.
And I guess, like you said earlier, it's voluntary on both sides. And so there's somebody that's neutral to the situation that would facilitate this. Is that right? It's not just sending somebody a Facebook message and going, hey, can we catch up? I heard you stole my car.
Yeah, look, whilst that sounds ideal and a really interesting process, I don't know that the success rates would be so high that way. But yes, we have in Australia and in New Zealand, and I talk about New Zealand because that's at the forefront of this process and they've really got some great practices in place. But we do train, and there are really experienced restorative justice facilitators or conveners that do this for a living. So they are neutral to the situation. Their role is to facilitate the storytelling and helping everyone to have their say and to to be able to hear and listen to each other's perspectives, and to, in a neutral, really neutral way, facilitate outcomes that help both victims and offenders.
I'd love for you to share, you said that this program has been used in a number of places, including in New Zealand. What has some of the feedback been from both the offenders and also the victims after completing this process?
Yeah, and that's, I think, where the power of this process comes into it. Because they are able to heal in a sense, and it is about healing in many instances. So for people who are involved in it, and I'll talk from, I guess, the victim's perspective firstly, they're able to really look at understanding offenders, really understanding it and empathising with people, and really coming out of that with a whole new perspective as to why this happened. So it wasn't necessarily about them, but and then having an input into, well, what happens next? What does sentencing look like for this individual? And how can I then control my outcome personally? And for an offender, being able to gain insight into your own behaviour is quite powerful itself. Mm-hmm. So we see some really strong outcomes, and there is some really great statistics around the country. In Australia, we have it available in all states, and it can happen from pre-sentencing to post-sentencing, and police can refer, particularly in youth experiences, can refer to restorative justice processes before it even gets to court, so as a deferral out of the court system where it's appropriate.
In Queensland at the moment, our parliament is going to be debating some new legislation around youth justice in particular, and there's a lot of different ideas being looked at from preventative strategies around supporting families and the offenders to keep them engaged in school so that it stops this offending happening. But do you think that this, you'd like to see more of this restorative justice offered to victims and also offenders?
Absolutely. And I think in Queensland, it's interesting to watch the debate of what's happening in this space now, because there was a project put in place that I think it was starting in 2016, where they reintroduced referrals from the court to restorative justice for youth offenders. And it was called the Restorative Justice Project, well, aptly named. And they had some fantastic results from that. So that ran from up until 2019, and then the results were released in 2022, not that long ago. And they showed reduced rates of reoffending, the fact that if you divert people out of the court system, out of the prison system, then offenders are more likely to, rehabilitate and understand what else they can do. If you take that really strong punitive approach to youth justice, then chances are that you're creating just better criminals. They go into the prison system, they're exposed to others who are in that similar situation, and they learn better tricks of the trade. They're sometimes exposed to adult offenders when they're in that kind of 18-year-old age group. And so it does then send them into that spiral of reoffending. So if we can get people away from that, then I think that's something that we would highly, highly advocate for.
Amber Williams, CEO of Resolution Institute, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much.